Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. All sorts of arguments are, have been, and will be made in the public square in favor of natural or traditional marriage. Now, some of them really get traction, depending on who you're talking to, and some of them fall flat, depending on who you're talking to. If we're going to talk out there in that open marketplace of ideas, the naked public square, about marriage, how should we approach it? Can we learn something from the apologetic task in arguing in favor of natural traditional marriage out there in the public square? Joining us to talk about that on this Monday afternoon, September the 17th, Dr. Jay Richards. He's Senior Fellow and Director of the Center on Wealth, Poverty, and Morality for the Discovery Institute based in Seattle. And he's author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled "To Defend Marriage, We Should Learn a Lesson from Apologetics." Dr. Richards, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Great to be with you.
You're going to argue in favor of traditional marriage. That mean that you're against marriage equality?
That's one of those, you know, when did you stop beating your wife questions, of course. I live in Seattle, as you said, and so there's bumper stickers everywhere that said, I believe in marriage equality. If somebody tells me that or asks me that, I ask them, what do they mean by marriage? Because in my view, that's precisely the issue here. No one's having a debate about whether gay people should have equal rights or be treated kindly or anything like that. What we're talking about is what marriage is, what that word in English refers to, and especially this question, is there a human institution based on human nature that we find in every time, in every place, in every culture? And if so, what is that? And are we allowed to have a word that refers to that institution and distinguishes it from every other type of institution? I mean, literally, the issue boils down to the question, is there a thing called marriage, and are we allowed to have a word that refers to it?
I want to come back to what marriage is in a minute, but I guess even more fundamentally, sometimes you have to make the case, even with Christians, generally, mm-hmm. I mean, not to be political here, but generally of kind of the more libertarian bent, mm-hmm. that we can make moral arguments in the public square without popping open the Bible. Can we do that?
Absolutely. And in fact, everybody kind of knows this, but we forget it. I mean, sometimes as Christians, we think if we're going to make a moral argument, we have to cite Scripture. But, you know, Paul himself says in Romans, from the foundation of the world, God's invisible qualities and divine nature are clearly seen from the things that have been made. And later on in that same text, he says that, the law is written on the heart. He's talking about the Romans who don't have the law but still have some sense of morality. And it's important to realize that. Everyone has at least some vague sense of the moral law. Everyone knows that, you know, it's wrong to torture a child for the fun of it. So you don't have to be a Christian to know that. And what that means is that we can make moral arguments that are also public arguments. We just have to make sure that we're framing them in terms that resonate with those kind of what you might call the kind of natural law impressions that people have, as opposed to specific biblical claims, which of course are compatible with it, but you don't have to frame a moral argument in that way.
So I take it that we have kind of two things already working in our favor. One is what you just mentioned there, a natural knowledge of kind of this innate knowledge, not of God per se, but of a moral order.
Right.
Okay. And then the second thing would be what you would call publicly available evidence. Is mm-hmm. there any evidence that marriage is a particular thing and that it's a particularly good thing?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, this is the first thing we can always do. We can always make what you might think of as sort of prudential or consequentialist arguments in favor of marriage. In other words, we can look at all the social scientific studies and say, okay, on balance and all things being equal, are people better off married or divorced? If you ask the question that way, we've got thousands of studies now from about the last 40 years that show that on almost any metric you can think of, when you're talking about adult men and women that are called to be married, we're better off married than divorced. We're healthier. Our economic status is better. We live longer. We're less stressed out. All these kinds of things. And so that's talking about just men and women that are married. Then when you get to children, of course, I mean, everyone knows this. It's not especially controversial that acceptance, kind of extreme circumstances in abusive settings, children are better off if they have a married mother and father in their homes raising them.
What about the single mother, the single father? Where do they fit in all of that?
Well, it's, you know, my view as a Christian, I say God can take any situation and turn it into something good. So we're talking about the kind of statistical averages. Of course, there are many heroic moms and dads that, that have to, have a tough road to hoe and they pull it off. I know people like that. But nevertheless, on average, children are better off if they're with their mother and father, and people are better off married than divorce. That doesn't mean there aren't exceptions and that we can't overcome difficult circumstances. It's just that if you look at the statistical averages, we know that you're much better off married.
Here's the first argument you're going to encounter, as you well know, Dr. Richards, and that is when you ask that initial question that you talked about at the very beginning, what is marriage? And someone is going to say, well, marriage has been almost anything you can imagine over the course of man's existence, over the broad swath of all these cultures and ideas and religious influences. It's impossible, their argument is basically, it's impossible to define marriage because it has embraced so much variety.
Well, yeah, that's right. But if you push people on that, usually the only example they can mention that really makes a difference would be the question about monogamy or polygamy. That's certainly a diversity over cultures, even in Western culture. If you include Jewish culture, there was some polygamy. And so that's one variation. There's some situations. It's almost always polygamy in the sense that you have one man and several wives. But even in those cultures, it's normally not considered normative, and where it's accepted, it's almost always still one man and one woman at a time getting married. And so we got to sort of come up with a way of accepting that reality. Nevertheless, in the West, everyone has, this is kind of part, at the moment, part of the moral consensus that it's a part of a democratic society that monogamy is a good thing. We know that women are better off if they're not, you know, one of several wives that, you know, maybe a powerful husband is collecting or something like that. But even with that one instance, you can look at every time and place in every culture, and you can find an institution in which a man and a woman come together publicly, they covenant together in some sort of way in which they pledge their lives and their fidelity to each other, and they come together with a special connection to the bearing and the raising of children. That institution, so far as we can tell, has existed everywhere, and it's widely recognized, and that's what I would say is the kind of common core of what you see as the institution of marriage in every culture. So it's universal, it exists prior to the American experiment or any political experiment, it's not specific to any religion, so that's why I would say we have every reason to think it's based in human nature, and that it's an institution that we discover, we recognize, rather than just merely making up as we go along.
You make reference to an article in the Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy, multiple authors, but what was the general finding there by those authors as to kind of a lowest common denominator definition of marriage?
They define it more or less, as I said a minute ago, and it's Sheriff Gergis, Robert George, and Ryan Anderson. Anyone that's interested in this, I very much recommend that they get this article. It's called What is Marriage? In Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy. But this is what they say. They say marriage involves, first, a comprehensive union of spouses, that is, husband and wives, second, a special link to children, and third, norms of permanence, like monogamy and exclusivity. And that, it's very important, because notice this isn't a religious argument. It's essentially an analysis of what are those properties that this institution shares in common across all cultures and all times. And what's interesting about this is that the institution of marriage is far more universal than our American commitment to individual rights. I mean, what's funny is, you know, the Declaration of Independence, when Thomas Jefferson wrote it, the reason he made a point about these inalienable rights that individuals have is because it was contested at the time. Most cultures, if anything, denied that humans were created equal, and so the founders felt like they had to defend it. Now, I, of course, believe they're true. That's not my point. But what I'm saying is, if you're going to make any claim that there's any pre-political reality that a just and limited government must recognize, it would be marriage. Marriage is the thing that has the kind of universal testimony of human cultures on its side.
Are we essentially arguing here out in the public square, and this has been put upon us. It's now necessary to argue what our ancestors may have just considered common sense. Are we arguing essentially that marriage is a unique relationship, that it is a particular thing, not just anything?
Absolutely. I mean, that's really the question, because, of course, there are all types of human relationships that you can have. There's all sorts of relations, relationships that people of the same sex can have. There's no sort of denying that. We have all sorts of relationships as coworkers and brothers and sisters and parents and children and all those kinds of things. The question is there an institution in which a man and a woman come together and sort of uniquely pledge themselves in this way with a special connection to the bearing and raising of children? And if so, are we allowed to have a word that refers to that, or do we have to basically say we're not going to refer to that institution and that relationship, but we're only going to kind of have this kind of vague term? Well, that's a very radical thing to say that, no, culturally, we're basically not allowed to have a word that refers to that because some people maybe feel excluded. That's a very strange thing to say, and it really requires that people say, you know, the difference between a relationship between a man and a woman in marriage is not relevantly different than some other kind of relationship that two men could have together. And that so profoundly contradicts common sense that I think when people see that that's what we're actually talking about, I think we can win the argument.
When we come back, I want to explore a couple other ideas here. One of them off the bat is, while we talk about traditional marriage and we're kind of stuck with that term, that does, in a sense, have some pitfalls. I wonder if a better term might be natural marriage, especially when it comes to that undeniable link of between marriage and children. There's something natural about that. There's something in nature about that. Our guest, Dr. Jay Richards, he's Senior Fellow and Director of the Center on Wealth, Poverty, and Morality for the Discovery Institute based in Seattle, and author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled "To Defend Marriage, We Should Learn a Lesson from Apologetics." We'll post a link to the Discovery Institute at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand.
How would you like to win a 4-CD set of 45 Reformation hymns? It's titled Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church. Now here is how you enter this contest. First, like the Facebook fan page for Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, facebook.com/Lutheran Public Radio. Second, post an invitation for your Facebook friends to listen to Lutheran Public Radio. And third, send the text of your Facebook post and the number of your Facebook friends to contest@issuesetc.org. We'll give away this 4-CD set, Heirs of the Reformation, to the contestant with the best Facebook post and to the contestant with the most number of Facebook friends. We'll announce the winner on Monday, October the 1st. Participate in a Facebook contest for Lutheran Public Radio during the month of September.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
What is the biggest misconception about the worship wars? I've written an article for the latest Issues, Etc. journal titled Behind the Music, The Real Worship War. You can read it by subscribing to the Issues, Etc. journal. Just look for the subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The latest journal also contains Hisham Chihab's article, From Muslim Extremist to Follower of Jesus. Subscribe to the online Issues, Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper, every service every Sunday, and Wednesdays too, preaching Christ crucified and risen. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is, 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri, or find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilk. Dr. Jay Richards is our guest. We're talking about defending traditional marriage. In that vein, Dr. Richards, I wonder, A term that I've heard used often by, well, she's a regular guest here on the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute, is natural marriage. I don't think she has a problem, per se, with traditional marriage, but she likes to talk about natural marriage, putting the point on the fact that there is this undeniable link with reproduction and with the raising of children. What are your thoughts there?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, and it's easy when you're in the middle of this debate, and I've probably done it myself, you know, slipped into saying traditional marriage, but it sort of implies that, well, we're in some ways conceding the point. We're saying, well, yeah, there's several types of marriage, and the type that I'm talking about is traditional marriage. Natural marriage is a really good modifier because it clarifies what exactly we're talking about. I mean, it's remarkable. We don't think about it often, but each of us, you know, has many organs in our body. Just to get biological for a minute, we have a heart. Of course, the heart works on its own. That is, it doesn't need somebody else's heart in order to work. My lungs work on their own. I don't need somebody else's body for them to fulfill their proper purpose. But we have these other organs, this other set of organs, that actually can't fulfill its purpose ultimately without another person of the opposite sex. It's our sex organs that, when they come together, are complementary and work together to complete each other in the bearing of children. And so we see this in our very bodies, that in one way we're naturally incomplete except in this particular union. And that points, I think, to the fact that what marriage is, it's certainly a human institution with human traditions attached to it, but it represents and it protects and it recognizes this thing that's based in human nature. And that's what's so important to point out here. Certainly there's diversity of, you know, marriage traditions, the way people dress and those kinds of things. But in every case that we know of, they're specifically rooted in this reality of our nature. And that's what I think is very important to make that point, because basically saying, look, we're not just a bunch of cultural relativists. We think there are certain realities out there, and what a culture and a society that's just is going to do is we're going to recognize those realities that exist prior to themselves, and that's the case here. That's why I don't think the government recognizing natural marriage, they're not imposing a religious vision on the population. They're doing the same thing they do when they recognize individual rights. Just as the government, if it's just and limited, will recognize that human beings as individuals have particular rights, it will also recognize this pre-political institution of marriage. And so that's really what I say to the libertarian who says, well, you know, marriage, that government should be completely out of the marriage business. I say, why don't you think the government should be out of the individual business? I mean, obviously you think a limited government is supposed to accept certain things that exist outside itself. Why is marriage not one of those things it should recommend and recognize?
How do you respond to this argument? Comes up quite often. Look, how would two men getting married in New York or Massachusetts have any bearing upon my heterosexual marriage in Illinois or Washington? Why? How do you respond to that?
Well, I would say, you know, that might make sense if we're all just sort of isolated, but we exist in a society. And so it's the same kind of claim as if somebody said, how is it that my counterfeit money and the economic system won't affect the rest of the money? Well, we know it's called Gresham's Law in economics. Bad money chases out good money. And so if your society suddenly sort of degrades its recognition of this institution, over time it degrades the institution itself. Now, you can sort of think of that philosophically, or we can just simply point to the facts. Other societies that have done this, places like the Netherlands, who've spent years experimenting with this idea of same-sex marriage, they don't suddenly become marriage paradises where everybody pairs up and gets married. What happens is that the society itself quits having the institution, so that now most Dutch people that are marrying age, they don't even bother to get married. So it's not as if suddenly you've got both gays and heterosexuals marrying up. It's just that you actually destroy the institution. So it's really naive and doesn't recognize our social nature, I think, when people think that redefining marriage in one corner of society is going to have no effect on the other. We just know that's not true.
You say, based upon that evidence where we've seen it happen, that redefining marriage would foment culture wars everywhere, ending in a draconian loss of religious freedom. That's pretty stark future you paint there. What's your idea?
Well, I mean, I think we're already seeing hints of this with our neighbor to the north. Many Americans have heard this story about a pastor a few years that simply is basically preaching on marriage and what the Bible said about marriage, and it was treated as hate speech. He was actually convicted of a crime. It was later overturned by a higher court, but it's, I think, a kind of portent of what is to come, because you just have to think about the rhetoric over marriage right now. I mean, it's being framed as a civil rights claim. It's being framed as if we're dealing with exactly the same kind of moral issue that was involved in the civil rights movement. Well, think, you know, if it's really like that, it's not like culture, for instance, when it comes to racism, we don't continue to say, well, you know, everybody has the right to their own opinion, and if you want to be a racist, then, you know, great. In fact, what we do is we sort of heap scorn on people like that because we think it violates not just our sort of American ideals, but, you know, the fundamental reality of moral truth. The same thing's going to happen with marriage. If people who defend marriage as it's always been understood are actually bigots, if we're actually sort of saying things like a racist would have said 50 or 60 years ago, there's no way that that's going to be continued to be tolerated. It will be treated as if it were racism or something like that. And I think we're already seeing hints in cultures that are farther along this path than we are. It's not like we're going to be able to sort of all just agree to disagree. If this campaign to redefine the institution of marriage succeeds, people that hold the prior traditional view will be treated as moral pariahs, and I think there's no doubt that that's what will happen.
Are you saying that marriage is so fundamental to our other public institutions that if it were to be redefined, the rest of them would eventually be up for grabs too?
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, I think clearly the institution of marriage is more fundamental, say, than our political contract. I mean, obviously the institution of marriage pre-existed the American founding, it pre-existed, you know, the early American colonies. It even, you know, sort of pre-existed Western culture. And so it's more fundamental than our political contract. In fact, I think the American political contract sort of presupposes it. And so if somebody says, well, I'm going to continue to defend this American idea of individual rights, but then deny the institution of marriage, I would say that's kind of like sawing off the branch that you're sitting on. Because to defend individual rights, you ultimately have to defend the source of those rights, the fact that human beings are made in the image of God and we have these intrinsic rights simply by virtue of being human. You can't call on the natural law to defend one thing and then deny it someplace else. And so I would say any society that can arrogate to itself the authority to redefine marriage is very unlikely to continue recognizing individual rights for long. And so that's why I actually think if you really believe in limiting government and individual rights, you also need to be defending the institution and definition of marriage.
So that's the response to the aforementioned libertarian who says, look, I think government should be small and out of my business to the greatest extent, and to be logically consistent, it is laissez-faire when it comes to marriage.
That's right. I mean, I think, in fact, it contradicts that libertarian commitment. If a person says, you know, he believes in a limited government and a just government, I say, okay, what limits the government exactly? Well, the thing that limits government is those things that exist outside its jurisdiction. The government recognizes individual rights. It doesn't define our rights. It simply accepts those rights that already exist. The same exact thing is true of marriage. The question is not whether the government gets to define it. You know, the question is whether it's going to recognize it. And so structurally, it's exactly the same issue. And so that's why I'd be willing to say, look, if you're a libertarian and you really believe in just and limited government, you need to be involved in this marriage debate because your deepest political and moral convictions are at stake here as well.
With only about a minute here, I guess the final argument that is often resorted to in the end in the public square is marriage is about love and it's about my freedom to love whoever I want. What's the easiest way to respond to that with 1 minute?
Well, I would say certainly people have the right to love people and to have certain sort of, you know, I'm not one to say you're not allowed to have certain feelings. And in fact, I think many times our feelings, we don't have a whole lot of control over them. But it's not as if we have the right to just do anything we want. And so I think sometimes people say, well, I should have the right to marry anyone I want. At that point, you're saying, okay, what exactly do you mean by marriage? Because if marriage just is an institution that involves a man and a woman with their complementary nature, with this connection to the bearing and raising of children, it just doesn't make any sense to say you have a right to marry someone of the same sex anymore than to say that you have the right to be a parent. It just doesn't recognize what marriage is and what it refers to in reality.
Dr. Jay Richards is Senior Fellow and Director of the Center on Wealth, Poverty, and Morality for the Discovery Institute based in Seattle, and he's author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled To Defend Marriage, We Should Learn a Lesson from Apologetics. Thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with Pastor Tom Baker about the children of Israel entering the Promised Land, a little Sunday school lesson with Tom Baker of Law and Gospel. And then we'll discuss the new book, The End of Men and the Rise of Women. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will be our guest. Speaking of books, the Issues Etc. book of the month for September is one that I highly recommend. It's one of those places not only in intertestamental history, but also in intertestamental writing and literature, where I'll have to admit my knowledge is very, very thin. That's why I'm happy to have a copy of the Apocrypha, the Lutheran edition with notes. It's like taking a course, a college or seminary level course, on these intertestamental books that are not scripture, but they fit beautifully between the two testaments historically, and they tell us a lot, especially as Christians, about that time, not only in terms of its history, but also in terms of its theology, and are highly regarded by the greatest theological thinkers in Christian history. The Apocrypha, the Lutheran edition with notes, is available from Concordia Publishing House. Give them a call, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. book of the month for September, the Apocrypha, the Lutheran edition with notes. Or you can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. It's on every page of our website, issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. book of the month for September, the Apocrypha. We have all of the evidence, the history, and the common sense on our side. We should not fear to step out into the public square and make good, basic, natural law, moral arguments in favor of natural marriage. Not only can we do it, we have to do it. It's our duty at a time like this. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. And Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.